Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another exciting program of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, and Justin is out this week, but will be with us next week. So we have a great show for you lined up today. I know that in the past we've had coaches come on and talk about where they are in their career, and today's guest is a return guest. He was with us about 6 months ago or so, once he had completed his initial coaching training, and has since gone out there and continuing to work on and manage and build his coaching practice. So I'm excited to hear from him on how that's going. And actually, he and I share a couple of cases. We do some conjoint, if you will, coaching several cases. So we'll be able to talk about that here in the show as well. So without further ado, we have Kyle LeCompte with us today. Kyle, how's it going?
Good, Bruce. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Good. Yeah, good to have you back. Good to have you back. So part of the show, you know, is we spread the gospel of coaching and talk about, you know, it's great for you to come on and share your experiences literally as a young coach. But because how old are you these days?
21.
21, man, that's young. So as a young coach, but also young in your development of your practice and building that and getting that off the ground. So if you could kind of give our listeners kind of the lay of the land of, because when you were here before, you had just finished, right, the coaching program.
Yeah, did the coaching school that weekend, and then Monday I was here on your show. So literally fresh out of coaching school.
Fresh out of coaching school. So if you would kind of lay out some of the things you've been doing and how your coaching has taken form since then.
Yeah, so it's been a journey for sure. Started out, doing the most basic of basic things, just getting my LinkedIn set up, which you helped me with, Instagram page, Facebook page, flyers, brochures, just your basic cards, of course, just your basic stuff. And then after that, I've got all that set up. I thought it'd be a good idea to check out some of the local meetups and coffees and breakfasts and getting to know all the players in this area, so to speak. So once I did that and started becoming more familiar with everyone and like more comfortable, because I'm not going to lie, at first I was pretty nervous about all that stuff, getting out of my comfort zone, never really done anything like that before. And then just as time went on, after like a couple months and a couple different meetings and coffees and all of that, just started to get more comfortable. And I like to think now I'm very comfortable with it. I love going to all these things, meeting new people, learning things, just getting my face out there is like the most important thing. And now with some of these cases, like some of the ones that we're sharing, I mean, honestly, it's been a phenomenal experience. Like, this is something I never thought I'd be doing, especially at 21 years old. This is it's still kind of surreal to me, but I don't know. This is just, I'm so thankful. I'm just glad I'm doing this. Cause I mean, even with my recovery, like as a former addict, so to speak, like it's helped me in like ways that I don't think anything else could have, you know, like being able to share my lessons and like what I learned through my process with other people who are going through that right now and be able to like coach them out of that. It seems, yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah. I mean, and you do seem so much more, man, I don't want to say, I'm saying mature in a good way. I mean, just in your craft, you know, I mean, obviously, otherwise too. I mean, obviously as a 21-year-old, you're still growing and maturing and changing and stuff like that. But man, just in terms of your, you know, the way you handle yourself and, front of clients and in front of other people. One thing I want to ask you, you know, before you got into this and got into the ground, and then, you know, once you got out there, and then you would tell people, yeah, I'm a recovery coach. You know, you started talking to people. I mean, weren't you kind of blown away on how well received you were by other people?
Oh yeah, that was definitely like I said, before I got on the ground, like that was my biggest fear. Like I was pretty insecure about it, because I thought, like, okay, how are these people going to look at me? Like, they have a master's degree and I'm, you know, over here as a coach at 21 years old. So I just felt super out of place the first couple times. But then after like meeting them and talking to them and saying, like, after seeing how they welcomed me once I told them I'm a recovery coach, it was pretty cool, because it was all super positive. Like, they were so impressed. I mean, pretty much everyone I've talked to about this has been genuinely impressed by it. So it's a pretty good feeling, to be honest.
Why don't you talk about one time you gave a talk?
Yeah, exactly. So this is another thing. another thing I did, in, like, as far as getting my practice, me and Bruce went to the Keller ISD. They had a fair about, you know, different resources that their school could use, and one of them was us as a, you know, as an addiction treatment type resource. So we go there, and I had a presentation in this room full of teachers, faculty, staff, administration, everyone. And it was a pretty packed room, like 20, 30 people or so. And like before this, I was genuinely excited for this one, and then go in there, absolutely killed the presentation. At least I thought I did.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, I had all these teachers and faculty, and, you know, everyone just came up and kept asking me questions about the material that I was going over, about me, about my practice. And it was just so cool to see, like, how engaged they were in this. And I don't know, just see, like, getting response like that, it just kind of validates everything I've been doing lately. So,
and then before that you'd given a presentation at a rehab center.
Exactly. So my very first presentation was at the Clear Fork. It's a underage, I mean, adolescent treatment center, sorry. And went there, and I just spoke to the kids about my story as an addict and what I'm doing now with it, and like how I'm helping people. And even there, like, all these kids, you could just tell how engaged they were with me, and how, like, afterwards I had people come up to me and, you know, give their thanks and, like, ask me questions. And I don't know, it was just, that's, again, like, that's just so cool to see. That just makes, I don't know, that just, that's better than any drug I could take, to be honest with you. So.
Exactly. And didn't one of the kids kind of remember you or something?
Yeah. Funny story. So one of the kids I walked into, he was there, and I thought I recognized him at first, and then he came up to me afterwards, and it turns out this was a kid I was smoking with, like, several months, yeah, like months or years before. So it was just wild. And then just to see where, like, I'm at now compared to him, I mean, hopefully everything's working out for him now, but just at that time, like, that was surreal. So.
Yeah, I think that's really cool, because I think a lot of people, you know, don't know how they'll be received. They get the coaching certificate, they do all this work, they come out, and it's one thing to have, you know, self-limiting beliefs or fears, and it's another to do it once you're kind of putting yourself out there in the capacity of a coach who helps people remove themselves from self-limiting beliefs and fears. So no, man, and I think you've done a fantastic job so far. You know, one of the things that you have made me aware of, is that, you know, it's a good balance, cause you're humble and you're fairly understated, and that's a compliment, because myself, I'm an overstated type of individual. And I think a lot of people in the coaching space are like, hey, they're just really kind of, almost, I don't want to say over the top, but just like super extroverted. And I know what, you know, we got to do to put ourselves out there and sell ourselves. But I think you've been able to do that and you know, stay very calm about, you know, your demeanor and everything. And I think that's had a great influence. And I think after we did that school presentation, folks, I'm not going to lie, I think there's been several times that I've been with Kyle here, either in a conjoint session or a school presentation or whatever, and the folks are just really focused on what he's saying and hanging on every word that he's saying. you know, and I think, you know, one is, you know, because of what he's saying, but also two, I think where he is, like, he's kind of right there in the demographic of many of the clients, you know, so he's right there square in the middle of the demographic of these clients. And I think for us that are coaches that work with youth or work with adolescents, as good as we are, or as good as we think we are, there really is no substitute for somebody who's in the middle of that demographic. You know, if we think about it, Alcoholics Anonymous and other types of support groups, right? And everybody's in there supporting each other because everybody's been in each other's shoes. Well, I think, well, you know, that runs true for recovery coaching. And here in a few minutes, we're going to talk about recovery from vaping, specifically vaping, not so much cigarettes, but we're going to talk a little bit about a program that Kyle and I have composed to help people get off vaping, because that is just an epidemic in this country. And I think, you know, with the law changes, particularly here in Texas and probably other states, where tobacco is now, you have to be 21 years of age to get tobacco, that a lot of these kids that were used to vaping in high school are now doing so illegally. And it left a lot of kids in the lurch, because now they're literally having to smuggle this contraband into the school, vape in the school, at the risk of getting a misdemeanor and or a serious ticket. And God forbid if somebody, let's say a 17-year-old had a, what, 20, 30, 40 pods on him. I mean, I don't, it could be a class A misdemeanor, and God forbid if, right? Because it's possession of a controlled substance.
Especially at a school or something like that. It's just,
you're in a school zone, right? And then you're contributing to the delinquency of minors, and you're committing a crime in a school zone. And next thing you know, this person could be faced with some felony style consequences, where 15 weeks ago, perfectly shady, but yeah, it wasn't like so. If you were 18, you could, you know, possess those products anyway. But there is this kind of forgotten population of these teen vapers, if you will, or kids that vape that are, you know, 21 and younger. I mean, they're out there still. They need help. They need services. Look, and everybody needs help and services. And you and I were having a discussion about making our group kind of available to everybody. And
so it's not exclusive to 18 and under.
Right. It's an equal opportunity destroyer, man. It's, you know, young and old. So I guess we can talk a little bit about the Juul program, right? You want to do that? So if you want, kind of, you're kind of the silent author. So if you want to talk about how we got into it and then your whole experience with it.
So a trend that we noticed with kids coming in, let's say with substance abuse problems, is once they kicked that substance, they'd always continue vaping. And that was pretty much common through every kid, no matter who it was, no matter what substance they were addicted to. Vaping was always part of that substance ritual, if you want to say. So once we got rid of the initial substance out of the way, whether that's marijuana or pills or whatever, we started to address the vaping issue. And this was something that we realized was just as hard to kick as, let's say, the pot or the pills or whatever. Like, this was by itself like a substance problem, this vaping was. So once we got that going, once we like kind of figured that out, how like common this was amongst everybody, we thought, okay, like, let's kind of like develop like some sort of program here to help out. So we took experiences from everyone that's come in, everyone that's kicked it, everyone that's like kicked the vaping, just what worked for them, what didn't work for them. And then I also used stuff that worked with me, like, cause I used to be a heavy jeweler, and that was the last thing I got rid of in my life. And that wasn't until a couple months ago that I stopped jeweling. But, and I realized like how difficult that really was, cause it's not just a choice that you can just put it down. Like, it's a serious chemical.
Let's park the bus there for a little bit, because I don't think anybody, I don't think there's a lot of people out there talking about, oh yeah, man, my Juul addiction. And I hate to use a brand name, but this is a podcast. But I'm not talking about enjoy, but I mean, all the vaping products are addictive. Make no mistake about it. But it seemed like the Juul had something, and still does, has something just a little bit more special that's in those Juul pods that's not in the other competitors' products. Anyhow, so, okay, so I really think that nobody's really talking about it, right? I mean, no, because the people, my experience is the people who are just deep off into vaping, they're into vaping. They're not going to be like, oh, yeah, this is really, I mean, unless they get literally laid up in the hospital themselves with the bad lung, then, you know, so there's just not a lot of those people coming out yet on social media saying, oh yeah, my vaping career was horrible and this, and you know what I mean? Like you do with cigarettes and the person with half their throat, you know, removed on TV, or shouldn't have been vaping. I mean, that's hasn't kind of happened yet. So if you could just kind of walk us a little bit through, like we do everything else, like when you started vaping, how, you know, when did you do it? You can kind of go back and forth, you or most users, which I think there's nothing, anyway, you can speak for yourself in a minute, but I don't think there's anything super unique about your vaping that differentiates you from other kids that vaped a lot. So go ahead and kind of walk our listeners through, you know, how old you were, when it began, when you would use it, the flavors, right? And, you know, kind of, you know, walk us through the whole vape career.
Yeah, so I actually started this before anything else. I was a freshman in high school, so probably, what, 14, 15 years old, 15 years old. And it started with the, we could only go to this one sketchy store to get it, so we could only get these blue, they're called the blue sticks or whatever, like 300 hits and then they're dead. And it only started because I just kind of was like attracted, or I thought like the smoke look was cool, like blowing smoke out of your mouth looked cool, like that was appealing to me. I didn't even really know about nicotine and like how that actually works. So just kind of started that way, and then upgraded to like a mod like a year or two later with the one that could fill up an entire room with smoke, or vape, I should say, sorry. And then it just kept going on. But like during this time, this is probably like throughout all of high school, I didn't once think I was addicted. Cause like I was using like relatively low nicotine on all my vapes, and it was just more or less for the smoke, for like the look, like the taste, the feel. But then once I got to college and the Juuls started getting popular my freshman year of college. So that was 3 years ago. And that's when the Juuls really started coming out and becoming popular. And I got one, of course, cause like that's the trend. So I hopped on that. And then after that, like I really quickly, like a month or two later, I realized like, ooh, I'm addicted to this. Like this is not, I'm not quitting this anytime soon. And that didn't bother me because I didn't think it was that bad, honestly, at the time. And then
what made the Juul so much better than the other stuff?
So it's just the drag. Like this is so unrelatable to someone that doesn't vape or anything, but it's just such a smooth drag. It's simple. It looks cool. Like it's relatively inexpensive compared to the other ones. And I'm telling you, that drag and like throat hit, that combination is just, I mean, even now, like after I quit, I can still say like, it's pretty fantastic. Like, I wish it wasn't.
It's kind of high too, right?
Yeah. I mean, the buzz is in the morning, like that first buzz that you hit in the first rips, like you hit it two or three times and you're pretty much spinning in your bed in the morning from that Juul. And then after a meal or something, like hitting that, it was just like, it was perfect. Like that, just that combination of the throat hit with the buzz and the pretty decent taste, I guess, and how slick it looked. Like there was just nothing that like nothing about it made you want to quit. Like I totally understand when people say I'm never quitting this Juul, because why would you when something's that perfect until you realize the health effects and the illegality of it.
Why sometimes flavors are a big deal, like mango. Why is that a big deal?
So the Juul has like five different flavors, and like the most popular of the ones, the mango. And as I'm sure you can imagine, like the mango tastes pretty fire. Like that's a good flavor right there. And so once you hit, like, I don't know, hitting that, it was just compared to like any other flavor, like, cause after a while they banned the flavors in stores. So you could only order them online. So getting, for the longest time, you're only getting mint or something, some boring flavor like that. So anytime you could get a mango, it was just gold. Like it was gold, that mango pod. So, but after a while, this is when I noticed it became like an issue. It was like, I didn't even really realize what flavor I was hitting anymore. It was solely because of the nicotine, the buzz. And if I went like over an hour without it, like I'd already start getting those cravings pretty bad and irritable and just anything. So And this is the same with like everyone else that I've talked to about this, the exact same.
So, because it is so right there with you, I mean, talk about some of the situations that you can actually lose track. Like you're hitting this thing all day long, driving a car at a stop sign. What are some of the pockets where now that you've quit, you look back and go, dang, man, I was probably hitting that thing here.
I'd say the biggest one is driving. Anytime I'd be driving, I'd just be nonstop chiefing on that jewel in the car. So if I was driving, let's say I went to on a 40-minute drive or something, like I could drain like half a pod in that driving time. And that's like half a pack of cigarettes. So, and it wasn't even at that point, it's not even for the buzz or the throat hit. It's just like it's such a habit. Like it's just you're so just addicted to not even the nicotine at that point, but just the ritual that's associated with the jewel, like reaching down in the cup holder, pulling it out, hitting it, driving with the left hand, jewel in the right hand. And
so you're actually vaping more than a smoker smokes almost.
Oh, definitely. Because you got to think about it. With a cigarette, you got to light it. You got to usually smoke outside, can't smoke inside. You don't want to smoke in your car. So ash it, it's a mess. But this jewel is just, I mean, I didn't have to hide it anymore because I was at that age. But like as a high school kid could easily like be jeweling for months, years without their parents even having the slightest clue. So it's just so easy to hide. There's nothing. Yeah.
Man, I hear you talking about how the jewel made you feel. It's almost like even today, if you were to stack up your weed experience and your jewel experience like this, what I'm feeling from is almost like the jewel experience is more of a bell ringer for you than the weed.
Well, yeah, because now when I look back on weed, like I regret that. I mean, I think about all the crappy times I had, all the bad things that it caused me in my life. And so, but looking back on the jewel, like it never actually caused anything bad in my life, you know, so to speak, other than, you know, until I realized like, okay, like the health, because for me, the biggest thing was like the health, like how it kind of freezes your lungs and like all that kind of stuff. So, but yeah, even now today, like when I see someone jeweling, like I'm not going to lie, like I think about it pretty often. And it's just something, you know, I got to deal with, because I know if as soon as I take another hit, like it's back on that jewel train heavy. So.
Right. So, and plus I think it's good for you as a role model, right? If you're saying you're a recovery coach and you're like, no, man, I'm a 6-pot-a-day kind of fool or whatever.
Yeah. So at first when I was getting off, you know, the harder things, like the jewel was there for me. And it helped me get through that. So I don't regret not quitting then, because it did help me get off the more serious stuff, so to speak. But after that, and after I saw like, okay, I was able to get off this and that and, you know, really become sober and like move forward in my life. This, I don't want to be the guy jeweling now, you know, like I do want, as a recovery coach, like I want to like show that in every aspect, not just this. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's something, yeah, we want to be a good role model for the people coming in. So,
and that's good because it's an addiction. I mean, it is an addiction. I mean, I guess for me to be the best person ever, I need to give up my coffee. So I'm sitting right behind you here. I'm not trying to call foul on that, but you know, I think a lot of people, you know, a lot of parents that I talk to, and I think people we're going to talk in front of here in the near future, just underestimate the addictive power of vaping, you know what I mean? And to hear you just like, yeah, man, like, whoo, that would be the thing. You know, if you ask a lot of people, that'd be the thing I'd get back into, right? Like, oh, no, marijuana is this and that and the other, particularly as a legal user, right? You're 21 and over now. Think, man, you know, that's right there at every gas station or whatever. And look, man, and this is the stuff that I've always, and look, I'm an older person, right? I'm 56 years old, but damn, you know, like just the psychological addiction alone. So when we talk to people, you know, we get them through the physical addiction and then we help manage the psychological addiction. And what we know about smoking and now juuling or vaping is that to some degree, that psychological addiction lasts forever. To some degree, just like the saying goes, you can forgive, but you'll never forget. Well, that runs true with this, man. Like, you are not going to forget how this shit makes you feel. Like, you're going to see the pod, you know, wow, or see the picture of mango or watermelon, like, ha, huh. You know what I mean? Like, and that's what's happening now with, I think, legions of women with this sparkling seltzer water, that White Claw, whatever stuff. You know, 65 calories, slim white can with some nice graphics because it's slim because I want to be. Oh, man. They are just raking them in, women in, since I haven't seen a beating like this since Smirnoff Ice, you know, came out. But that's another show, folks. I'll have my whole breakdown on that. Make no mistake about it. But back to this, right? So I think, you know, this is, you know, extremely powerful physiologically and psychologically. You know, just now, finally, people are getting racked up in the hospital with coated lungs and COPD symptoms. And man, let's, but for real, everybody, like, there are young cases of lung difficulties going to the hospital like never before. You know, the smokers, shoot, it'd take them till they were in their late 30s or 40s or whatever. Yeah, I'm in the hospital, this and that. Shoot, man, these vape kids are rolling in there now in their early 20s with some pretty profound COPD, you know, and other type of symptoms. So all that said, with my umpteen years of experience and Kyle's experience, and in my experience running and administering smoking cessation programs and nicotine-free clinics, and actually ran a stop smoking clinic and program inside a federal prison. I know, when, because you could still smoke in federal prison back in the day if you were an inmate, right? And we get these inmates to get off cigarettes because it's just better, sanitary, more healthy, and it saved them money on their commissary. And the feds were making a ton of money selling cigarettes to inmates. I ain't gonna lie, it was a moneymaker. But the health, you know, we were kind of, for these men and women that had like long sentences, were actually having to pay for their health care. It didn't make any sense. Anyway. So yeah, so we're joining forces here. So when Kyle and I authored this program, right now as it stands, it's a 4-week program. If I think it's going to morph into an ongoing support group format, but I think at first we're marketing this or selling this as a 4-week program right now. Now, obviously, this program is very cutting edge, very early. I know of nobody right now. Today's what, the 18th of November, 2019. I know of nobody else, maybe one other person, I think I saw some in some other state, but doing kind of a vape-free program. And so we're doing that. Pleased to be one of the first people on the block doing it, but doing it not because we're trying to be first, just because we have the collective experience, strength, hope, knowledge, and clinical background and acumen and addiction acumen and background to really understand this thing at its core. Okay. And this is a little bit different beast than smoking weed. This is a little bit different beast than an alcoholic. This is a little bit different beast than somebody who's like a meth head or, you know, heroin person or bar tard or what have you. I mean, this is its own. The thing I like, well, that's challenging and I like about the vaping behavior and the vaping person is that it's really unique. You know what I mean? It's its own healthcare condition, right? Because, you know, the mumps is different than the chicken pox, even though there's some similarities, but they're different. So same thing with this, right? Anyhow, so let's talk about a few of our proprietary copyrighted moves here. So now some of this stuff sounds really simple to our listeners. They're going to be like, you idiot, like what are you talking about? So let's look at like one of the first goals that we have for our clients is try to leave your vape at home, right? Try to leave it at home. So why is that a big first step?
Well, because like I was saying earlier, so the place where I was hitting my Juul the most was in the car. So that's any drive I'm in, just nonstop hitting it, just nonstop hitting it. And so once I, this is something I actually did in my own recovery, so to speak, from Juul, is I just left it at home. And even if I was just going to the grocery store or somewhere close, I'd leave it at home, put it on the charger or something, head out, and then I'd come back and hit it again. So even though I'm still hitting it that day, it takes away just the a bit, like just hitting it out of habit in the car, for example, when I don't actually have a craving towards nicotine. Like
intermittent fasting?
Yeah, exactly. Like intermittent fasting. Exactly right. So in the car, if I go on a drive and I just hit it without even realizing I'm hitting, I'm just making that addiction even stronger. It's becoming more part of me than it would if it's just at home on the charger. So, okay.
Yeah. So you're doing this, and now you notice one day that, oh, snap, my vape is back at the house charging. I'm in traffic, man. Weren't you kind of fiending? Weren't you tempted to drive off and exit the road? Oh,
I mean, there was pretty much any time I was driving, I'd reach for the cup holder, move my fingers around down there, and there'd be nothing there, and I'd just be disappointed and upset. But that said, like, I knew I had something to look forward to coming home. So it just made me, in some ways, appreciate the Juul more, appreciate the nicotine more, which I know it sounds kind of counterintuitive here, but it got rid of the habitual, just hitting it without even thinking about it. So now, after that, I just became like more aware to me every time I was hitting it, even at home. Like I knew what I was doing now. It kind of took out just hitting it for no reason. It made me like really think about, okay, I'm going to hit the Juul now 3 times and I'm going to put it down or something like that.
Right. And the thing that I've noticed that this is different from cigarettes is that back in the day when we treat cigarette smokers, we'd look at the orality of it, but we'd also look at like things to put in your hands, things to do with, because there's this lighting ritual and there was other stuff with smoking. But here it seems, and I wish there was research to back this up, and I'm hoping that there will be, it seems like this is more of a straight up oral deal, more so. So what were some of the things that you would do to kind of offset the oral craving part of it?
So the biggest thing I would do is just chew gum. I'd get, for the longest period of time, I had like 4 different flavors of gum in my car. The mint, I had a fruity flavor for when I was craving the mango. Exactly. It wasn't mango. I think it was like some tropical berry or something, but I just had a variety of different flavors in the car. So I just go through like several pieces of gum on a car ride or something, like, you know. And one thing that I noticed just after a while, just it allowed me, because for the longest time, for like years and years, I thought my day, like I needed the Juul or some type of vaping device to get through my day. And even though I was still hitting it, I'd be out of the house for an entire day at school or with a case or just anything, and I wouldn't have the Juul. So I proved to myself I can get through the day without it, even though it wasn't easy. Like, and I was still hitting it at home. It no longer became such a part of my day as it was previously to doing this.
So that leads us up to our second goal, would be try to vape at night, you know, just try not to do it during the day, but to do it at night. So how did that work for you, just to say, okay, I'll be able to have a hit or two before I go to bed? What's the theory behind saying only use it at night?
Yeah. So had I not done week one and left the Juul at home, this only hitting at night, there's no way that would have been possible. Cause I mean, I can't just jump to that. I was too addicted. The Juul's it had too much power over me for it to just say, I'm only doing this at night. But so with me, pretty much with any substance, it usually at night, I had my strongest cravings, my like the biggest desire to hit it. And this is pretty similar with pretty much everyone I've talked to. They've all agreed like at night, it's just, that's the best time to do it. That's just like where you're consistently chiefing on it. So by only doing it at night, like the goal is to eventually get to the point where you're going through your entire day doing everything you got to do throughout the day without the Juul, without thinking about the Juul, or at least as little as possible. No hitting it in the car. If you stay home all day, you're not hitting it. And what I did is I just hid it. I hid the Juul, hid the pods, hid anything that would remind me of it during that time. And then at night, I just pull it out, hit it for a little bit, and then fall asleep. And this, out of everything that I did, I think this was the biggest one that just helped me get rid of the cravings, or at least limit the cravings.
And now at this point, this is where you stop getting any reloads or pods.
Yeah. So this was the point where I knew like, okay, the end is somewhat near at this point. So I had maybe like a pack of pods at home, which is 4 for those of you that don't know. And I was like, okay, not buying anymore. No more pods. I got 4. Once these 4 are dead, or out, it's over, done, throwing the jewel away. And this was a pretty scary feeling at the time, because I was like, okay, now it's real, now I'm actually quitting. But because of all these steps that I've taken and these cravings and like my dependency, like even my psychological dependency over it, although it's like far from gone, it's just it's contained at this point.
Okay. Now, how did you handle, okay, I'm only going to do this at night, the end is near, I'm not going to buy anymore, but then you'd wake up. You were talking about before, that'd be one of your great pleasures, is to wake up in the morning and have those first couple hits. Like, how did you overcome that?
So when I was hitting it at night, my entire life, I'd usually sleep with it on the jewel or whatever vape would be on the pillow next to me or under the pillow next to me or on the charger underneath my nightstand, like within an arm's reach of when I'm sleeping. So I'd wake up, check my phone, go through Facebook or messages, email, whatever, and then be simultaneously hitting the jewel. Like, this was my morning ritual for years. And then, so what I did is the night before I'd fall asleep, I just put the jewel in my closet, in the drawer, you know, just somewhere where it's far away. So like right before I go to bed. And then, so when I wake up, it's not there. It's just not, because I knew if it would be there, then I'd be hitting it. So, and then one of the big things that I did is I never really ate breakfast. And then, so like that morning, my cravings would be pretty strong. So once I started eating breakfast, even if it was just like a banana, apple, you know, some orange juice, like that went a long ways for me.
Awesome. Right. So you can't take away something from somebody unless you're going to replace it with something else. And so that's the theory there that we have in our program, of some things to do during those times that you were used to smoking and lining some of these behaviors out. So this is a very behavior program. And also, if you notice, look, we want people to quit cold turkey. I mean, make no mistake about it. If you can quit cold turkey, please quit cold turkey. But make no mistake about it. What we found out, even the people that are in our group that quit cold turkey, they're still struggling with the urges and the cravings, man. I mean, it's not like this group isn't for you because you quit. Nah, like they are for real. Like, okay, what do I do in the morning? Okay, what do I do at night? Okay, what's the next move? Okay, tell me some cognitive strategies that I can use so I'm not thinking about this all the time.
Because I tried quitting cold turkey and then it worked for a day or two and then I'd be right back on it. So it was just, I wanted to do something that would like, right. I was willing to like continue juuling for another week or two and then be able right. to stop.
It's your mind's willingness to do that. Like if you can't get your head around it, then you're not going to do it. You're just not, you know what I mean? So what, no matter what it is. So it's at this point in our program that some of our folks, not all, but some of our folks will be accessing nicotine gum. That nicotine gum, now we're just kind of dealing with somewhat the chemical aspect. So there's the 5% gum, there's 2% gum. And we had an individual that we've been working with very successfully use the nicotine gum, right?
Exactly.
Any thoughts?
Yeah, the nicotine gum. And this is something I didn't actually personally do, but everyone I've talked to, everyone that's quit has said like this has helped them tremendously. So with the Juul pods, they offer 5% and then 3% pods. And most people go with the 5% because of the throat hit, how nice it is. The buzz is stronger. Like if you're vaping a Juul, it's probably going to be the 5%. But if you drop down to the 3%, although you're still getting the nicotine and you're still, you know, I guess getting your fix, so to speak, like it's not as desirable as it was before. It's not as satisfying, the 3%. So that kind of takes away just the overall experience of it. It makes it easier to go from 3 to 0. So this is something too that we're going to recommend in this program.
Exactly. Now, one of our steps is kind of a controversial step. It's for people who are 21 and older. We're probably going to end up taking this out because to the naked eye, it seems like, why the heck are you guys saying this? But once this program was getting started and we had people that were actually quitting, one of the steps after only using it at night and they got rid of it, of their own, and they weren't buying replacement pods and what have you, we made an allowance and we called it only hit your friend's Juul. Now, this is not giving anybody a pass to just snatch it. What have our clients found that was indeed a step toward them quitting.
So, yeah, so like a little, to make it a little less sketchy, so to speak, it's only like a close friend who you trust, who's, and you got to be older than 21. So it's not just, you know, walk into the bathroom and grab some random guy's jewel and start hitting it. We're obviously not saying do that. But so like a big thing with the jewel is just, it's just how like ritualistic it is. You're always doing it at the same times of the day, in the same places, and you know, but once you only hit friends jewel, it's usually in some type of different setting. You know, it might be on a weekend, it might be after school at this place, at the park on a Saturday, or wherever, whatever you're doing with your friends. So it kind of takes away the ritualistic, I guess, of it, and you're only hitting it for the nicotine buzz at that point. And that's only going to be maybe once or twice a week. This isn't something that you're going to be doing every day. So if you're with a friend for, you know, the entire weekend, that doesn't mean just hit his the entire weekend. That's obviously not.
And I think another thing our thinking was having this as a, and this behavior would only go on for about 6 days, because at the end of this phase, they need to be, getting rid of their vaping devices, pods, boxes. That's right, folks. Even the boxes with the pods, chargers, man, these kids will just sit there. And they'll have all their crap piled up in their room, and they'll just stare at it. And it's just like, literally, the charger and the empty boxes, right? This is crazy, right?
Even though you can't actually do anything with that, like just seeing that in your room or like around your bed, like you, it's obviously that's going to make you want to go out and buy a jewel. So you just got to get rid of everything. And by get rid of it, doesn't mean throw it in your trash can. It means take it somewhere and just get rid of it for good. Like there's no way you're getting that back. Just to kind of, yeah.
So it's on this, at this stage now, where we're really working with some visualization, what's your life going to look like without you juuling and vaping, dealing with the kind of vape-free identity, putting your vaping days behind you in the past. It's a very heavy visualization along with some goal setting, man. I mean, particularly with younger clients, if they can't see it, they're not going to do it, right? And so these visualization exercises are just necessary. And having cognitive behavioral things about the, you know, their beliefs and then their new rational beliefs about vaping, right? Before it's okay, it's better than smoking, it feels good, flavor, it's no big deal, it's good for you. Man, that's all out the window now, man. It is bad for you. People are getting sick of this stuff. It is now illegal until age 21. The government's gonna crash this down sooner or later, I believe. But in the interim, man, you can't take away, they are taking away the flavored aspect, so it's not attractive to kids. I remember Camel Cigarettes used to have this cartoon character called Joe Camel. And this is back in the late 80s, and they kind of cartoonified the camel, and is like, no, because it was making, you know, making it appealing to kids, man. And the kids were starting off their smoking careers, man, with some straight up camels, man. Just like, whoa, like, you know what I mean? Just like heavy hitters. So, and guess what? That's what this is. Some heavy stuff, yeah, right here.
Stories of fifth graders in elementary school, just hitting it and getting caught within the school bathroom when they're 10 years old or something. So that, I don't know, something needs to be done, I think.
Yeah, so getting people to the point, and we're assisting people get to the point that they can quit vaping and stay quit. So, you know, there is this kind of ritualistic part about how are you going to dispose of your vaping devices? When are you going to do it? How are you going to do it? I think that has to be very deliberate. And I think you would agree with that, that I mean, if they even have to bring it into the group or, you know, let us break this stuff up into smithereens. So maybe talk a little bit about how important it is to get rid of all the chargers, all the everything.
So we actually had one case where a kid, he had gotten rid of some substance problems, and then the only lingering thing was the vaping, and we had helped him through that, and he had given us some feedback too on what was working with him or not. And then like 2 or 3 weeks later, he came in saying that he's done, he quit, it's over. But during this time, his parents didn't actually know he was vaping. They had questions about it, but they weren't 100% sure yet that he was vaping or not. So something I suggested was to the kid was saying, hey, you should give your Juul to your mom. You should turn it into her as like a little ritualistic ceremony.
Show of progress.
And also just setting drawing a hard line that like, okay, I'm done. Like, this is real. I can't go back. So he was kind of nervous about that, like how she would receive this news. And we actually did it all together in a session. And both the mom and the dad were just absolutely thrilled once he had told them that like he's done vaping. He's been doing it for the past X amount of months. And here's the Juul. I'm over. It's done. Not going back to this. You know, Bruce and Kyle helped me off of this. So that's something that, you know, I'm going to suggest to everyone moving forward, because I thought it was a really good idea.
Yeah. And we also were very lucky in getting him a job for a major logistics and freight company that is also keeping him busy. As a matter of fact, he's so enthralled in a good way with working, it's almost getting in the way of school. But guess what? This kid's not using drugs. This kid's not using marijuana. This kid's not using dab carts. This kid's not vaping. And he's going to work. He's going to school. And he's sleeping. And this was a picture perfect case, man. How we were, and it was really quick too, because we got the kid off of the dab carts. We should talk about that, but off the, you know, the cannabis, the THC vaping, to the nicotine vaping, to no vaping at all. And then, so it was just boom, boom, boom. And we were able to use drug testing with the kid, and we do nicotine testing as well as part of the program. Actually, I'll do a 6-panel test and make sure nothing's there. So our participants are drug free while they're, you know, going through it. And if they're testing positive for nicotine, I can track the progress of the nicotine saturation of the urine. So, all right, we've got 4 minutes left. So, yeah, one thing's that, why is this such an epidemic? And I'll tell you why I think, you know, a lot of people still smoke flower. They still smoke marijuana, but I think with the advent of the dab cartridges, that has made G-pens and whatnot and vaping of THC so much easier, so much readily available, virtually undetectable by drug dogs and law enforcement. That
And parents, right?
What is this cartridge thingy? And like, oh well, it's just nothing, and you can't tell. So yeah, if you want to talk about, I guess, a few minutes about how kind of vaping is the gateway drug type.
Yeah. See, everyone says, you know, marijuana, flower, bud, that's the gateway. And I mean, that's probably true too, in a lot of ways, but I think nowadays vaping is kind of taken over as the primary gateway drug. Cause like I said, you see these elementary school kids, these middle school kids hitting some strawberry banana flavored vape that they think is harmless, right? Cause that's the image about vaping, is that this is some harmless water vapor that you're just, does nothing to your body, it doesn't hurt anybody, and it looks cool, tastes good, but in reality, like, it is harmful. And once they do that, they get comfortable with that, then they move on to bud and other things. And now the biggest thing with the bud is, instead of moving on from a vape to a blunt or a joint, they're moving on from a vape to a dab cart, because in theory it's the same thing as a vape, right? You're vaping it, you're putting it on a battery, same kind of drag, same kind of ritual, same format, so you're not doing anything different with it. But the thing with these dab carts is like, most of these black market ones are so poorly made. Like, we have no idea what's in those. There have been tests done. There's everything, arsenic, vitamin E, formaldehyde. Like, it's just all these just whole things that, like, the last things you'd want to put in your body that are in these carts, these dab carts. And people think like, oh, this is healthy, it's weed, it doesn't hurt me. And these are 80% THC that just, if for a middle school kid or anybody for that matter to be hitting, is just ridiculous.
It is in that. So, all right, folks, we're just about out of time. Kyle, how can our listeners reach you? What are your Facebook page? What are some of your touch points that our listeners can reach you?
Yeah, so I have an email. It's at recoverycoachkyle@gmail.com. Again, that's recoverycoachkyle@gmail.com. And then I'm also on Instagram and Facebook as Recovery Coach Kyle. So feel free to check my pages out. Contact me if you have any further questions. I'd love to get in touch.
Exactly. And I can be reached at conciergecoach.net, CameronLPC.com. And of course, we have our own LinkedIn and Facebook page. And of course, you can download the podcast of the show anytime on Apple Podcasts. So we're proud to be on the platform there on Apple Podcasts. So, man, fantastic. Well, thanks everybody for listening to the Concierge Coaches Show here today. Hopefully you learned a little bit about vaping and what we're doing and using coaching techniques specifically to try to combat this epidemic in our country for adolescents and adults alike. So I'm sure we'll be coming back here in the near future and giving our listeners updates on our program.
Yeah.
And forward to it. Yeah. And how we're progressing in our ability to treat this, going from the kind of pioneer days, and we'll just hopefully the research will come out quick. So with that, we'll bid everybody a fantastic afternoon, and we'll see you here next week on the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. So until then, have a blessed week, and we'll see you then. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.